general fund and the technical assistance program to 229, and that is to provide funding for the national pollution, whatever it's called. Package 142 is the funding for the Lower Columbia River Estuary Program. This adds funding for this jointly funded program between the state of Washington and the state of Oregon. This has been in existence since about 1995, and it will provide funding for on-the-ground habitat and education projects. And packages 228 and 238 are similar to 229 and 239, where there's funding being shifted from the hazardous waste program to the water quality program. This is for Willamette River cleanup activities. On page 14, there are packages related to protecting people's health from toxic chemicals. The first one is the package 111, air quality, air contaminant discharge permit. And this is another one of those one-time general fund packages. And it would provide funding to maintain the program at its current level. There's also some shifting that goes on with mobile and toxics program work. So this package also addresses that. It depends upon a fee increase. And this is one that actually would increase revenues about 48%. Package 114, Air Quality Toxics, is a new program. Essentially, the federal government regulates point sources, which would be industrial sources, and there apparently is a feeling of inequity between industrial and general public efforts to try and maintain air quality. So this policy option package would add funding and resources to address the non-point source or the general public piece of trying to maintain air quality or improve air quality. To do this, a position was shifted from the open burning program, and that's why we have package 115. And in order to maintain the open burning program and restore that position that's moved over to air toxics, the governor's recommended budget proposes a fee, a new fee actually, to restore the position. On package 123, drinking water protection, this restores the seven limited duration positions that were phased out at the earlier point. It's all other funds. Turning to page 15, these are policy packages that protect people's health from toxic chemicals again. Package 130, underground storage tanks. There is a kind of a sunset on the current fee, which would actually drop the fee from its current rate of about $60 down to $35. And then there was an addition, basically considered one time as general fund, to sort of tide the agency over in the current biennium as this got started up. And so this package would add basically fee revenue to restore the revenue reductions that were taken and then bring the package or the program up to what it needs to be at to maintain the basic level of service we've enjoyed this biennium. Package 131, spill preparedness restoration, has been mentioned as a fee-related issue, as is 132. Both of these were basically eliminated in the current service level. There were revenue shortfalls for package 131 and again in 132. Package 133 brings us to some of the bonding issues that are in this agency's budget. As I said earlier, the orphan site program bonding was treated differently in the current service level, and so this essentially puts back the funding for the program at the level that it has been at. The bonding is the bond proceeds are used to clean up orphan sites. There's a technical definition, but it's basically where you can't find somebody who will pay for it, and you can't compel somebody to pay for a cleanup. That leads to page 16, which at the top of the page has the debt service for package 133. this is a different way of funding the debt service than has occurred in the current biennium's budget and in past biennium's budget. We're proposing that a one-time source of funding be used for the 2001-03 biennium. Previously, there was general fund for the debt service and general fund constraints helped us without that opportunity. Because it's one time only, there will be an issue in the 2003-05 budget cycle of how to fund the debt service. At this point, it looks like it may need to be general fund for that biennium. In terms of roll-up costs between the two biennia, there's about a $1.1 million difference between what's budgeted in the governor's recommended budget for the 2001-03 biennium and what would be needed in the 2003-05 biennium. Package 143 is the Lapine on-site sewer continuation. This was phased out in the current service level. It's all federal funds. And this relates to the conversation that happened during the Department of Land Conservation and Development's budget presentation. Package 950, limited debt service, and Package 920 are both interrelated. 950 is the debt service for 920. This is the lottery revenue bond proposal. Again, in previous biennia, this has been general fund proposed for the debt service, but that wasn't available this time. This proposal has about $305,000 of lottery funds for the debt service for 2003-05. This would increase by about $1.5 million to 2003-05, so there is a roll-up issue there in that sense. And Package 920 is the Clean Water State Revolving Fund that's been mentioned that provides the loans to municipalities for wastewater treatment. It adds $40 million of federal funds that are grants from the federal government that requires a match of state dollars, and the match comes from the $8 million in lottery revenue bond proceeds. It's an excellent match at 5-1, and so the governor proposes to continue funding it. On page 17, there are policy packages related to open, efficient, and accountable government. Package 112 continues the PM 2.5 monitoring network work that was begun. It was phased out in current service level. Package 113 is the vehicle inspection program policy package that would move the 75 contract positions and add two limited duration positions. For basically safety issues. Package 134 is an administrator for the Stephanie Halleck mentioned that they're splitting the waste management and cleanup divisions, and this would provide an administrator for one of those divisions. And Package 135 would provide a managerial position for the Northwest Region Solid Waste program area. Page 18, again, open, efficient, and accountable government. Community Solutions Team Restoration, this provides the funding for replacing the ODOT funding that is no longer available. And packages 161, 162, and 163 provide additional resources to the agency management division to provide funding for some initiatives to improve agency management, efficiency, accountability efforts, and also to deal with some of the workload that's expected to come from some of the policy packages that were mentioned earlier if those are approved. And that's funded with indirect revenue off of the programs, air quality, et cetera. Page 19 has basically a summary of all the packages that have fee-dependent issues. Packages 111, 115, 121, 125, 126, 130, 131, and 132 all depend on fee increases or establishments. Senate Bill 5516 offers increases that were made during the interim. And governor's investments are packages 120 and 122. That brings us to page 20. There are three technical adjustments that are recommended at this point. First one is to the program reduction package. That would be to move funding so that you don't have any kind of change in terms of the overall funding. It would just be on where the money is spent. It still would be in the water quality program, and it would shift from capital outlay to services and supplies, the revenue reduction, or excuse me, the expenditure reduction. Packages 132 and 150 have the right dollar figures on them in the system at this point, but in order to meet up with those dollar figures, we need to add 0.50 FTE to the heating oil restoration 132 package and 0.60 FTE to the package 150. And in conclusion, on page 21, there is a table showing what the governor's recommended budget would look like with these revisions. As you can see, there is no change to the overall dollars. It would add 1.10 FTE to the FTE count, which would bring you to a total of 893.09 FTE, and that's a 0.1% increase from the original governor's recommended budget. Are there any questions we can try and answer?
Questions or comments? I have to commend you on the creative way that you talked about fee increases in so many different ways in here. Representative Hayden.
Madam Chair, if it wouldn't be too much trouble for the administrator, I'd like to have some sort of a handout on the Lapine National Decentralized Wastewater Treatment and Disposal Project. I'd just be curious how that works. I've read through the budget stuff here, and it doesn't talk about the implementation. I'd just like to know that. But I have another question, Madam Chair. At several times in the presentation, I've seen the words general deterrence. So I looked it up in the emergency notes, and it says, with legislative approval, a compliance strategy to ensure compliance with environmental law. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency tends to prefer more reliance on the traditional command and control approach. The grant will be used to develop enforcement performance measures for EPA that can address questions regarding the effectiveness of general deterrence. What is general deterrence?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, it is the same thing in my mind as compliance. Deterrence means compliance in this case. And what we strive to achieve is compliance. And so in this case, that I think you're referring to a grant that the federal government provided, and I'd have to get you the specifics on it, to try some innovative compliance approaches. But what it means is when we go out, for example, in the hazardous waste program, where we will go out not in an enforcement mode, not in a regulatory mode, but we'll go out in a compliance assistance mode. The goal is to get to compliance and go out and talk to whomever it is. We might be in a particular class of generators or whatever, and go through, have a checklist, say this is what you need to fix here, and we'll be back at some point to check in, and we offer technical assistance at that time to help them do so. So that is an activity that generally the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency does not do. The state has the flexibility in our programs, because one of the things that we can do, since we're fee supported, is that we can provide assistance like that. We do a really good job in that program. We have similar activities. Our air quality program just started a new effort like that. We used to have an activity in the water program where we had what was called a sewage treatment plant circuit rider, a person who would just go around and meet with the sewage treatment plant operators and try and help them learn what they need to do to keep the plant in compliance. So it's an opportunity to deter pollution, to try and have folks be in compliance and not just stepping in with an enforcement action immediately. There are other examples that I can provide if you like.
Madam Chair, recently the EPA landed on a confined animal feeding operation in eastern Oregon and assessed a $50,000 fine on the first visit. Would that be general deterrence?
Representative Hayden, Madam Chair, I wouldn't want to speak for the EPA. In my view, that would be enforcement, and it could have a deterrent effect. I presume in their eyes they thought that it would. I don't believe that penalty has yet been settled.
One more example, Madam Chair. The Internal Revenue Service for a number of years used general deterrence If a few people would be convicted of not filing their taxes, then the rest of us would. I would hope that we would use more of an educational model and a persuasive model than a coercive, intimidating model in our agencies.
Representative Hayden, Representative Morgan, that is certainly my hope and my goal. I believe the reason that that model has gained a lot of use is because there are not enough resources to do all the work that needs to be done. And one of the techniques that is used to deal with that situation is to take a few examples, whether it's an enforcement or something else, and use those as examples for others. We hope that our program covers the full continuum of activities. Enforcement is at one end of that continuum, but we also provide other aspects to the program, whether it's technical assistance or education. The federal grants generally will provide some money for that activity, but the federal grant money is pretty much for traditional permitting, compliance, enforcement activities. The fee revenue is more flexible. The general fund revenue, obviously, is more flexible. Helen Lottridge does have some specific information on the federal deterrence grant that you referred to at the beginning, if you don't mind her providing that.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm reading it on page 111 of the Emergency Board Actions. I'm sure that there is more exhaustive information available, but I'm a little surprised that our legislature, Madam Chair, would request a grant from the federal government to implement coercive and intimidating measures in order to cow our citizens into cooperation.
One of the things that a number of us have been watching with great interest is as the administration changes in Washington, D.C., we've been looking to see how the EPA and the other agencies that have jurisdiction over how we do things in Oregon, whether the attitude towards having the states have more control over these programs and more ability to experiment and to have the federal government be more oriented towards describing outcomes rather than describing the process to get to the outcome. Have you noticed any kind of changes in that direction in the EPA?
Madam Chair, not so far. Madam Chair, could we add one thing in response to Representative Hayden on that
Absolutely.
Grant? Because I think there's a misunderstanding and we'd like to clear it up.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Representative Hayden. The page that you were reading from is a grant that we did request from EPA, and here's the reason. When we go about getting compliance, as Director Hallett mentioned, we believe that there are many instances where we can achieve equal or better results by technical assistance and education and helping the regulated party rather than just moving right in with the command and control approach. And often these actions aren't counted by EPA as actions to fulfill our work on our delegated programs. And so we asked for this grant to see if we couldn't prove it, essentially. So we asked to develop some sort of measures to determine and articulate the effectiveness of these more supportive and helpful approaches rather than the command and control approach. So it was really because in many cases we agree with you that we can get as good or better results by helping people out. It's not always the case, but often.
Well, Madam Chair, I appreciate that because several of the agencies whose budgets I'm inclined to support, such as the Department of Agriculture and the State Department of Forestry, have come in and said that education is our top priority. And enforcement, they didn't use the words general deterrence or command and control, but enforcement is a last resort. And I like that in our state agencies.
Where is the department in relation to this grant?
Chair Morgan, I'm going to need to get back to you on that. I haven't, that's being run out of our enforcement, compliance and enforcement section, and I haven't checked on that. The last I did, they were in the process of gathering data to show that in instances where we had gone in and done, say we did a blitz where we would say, we're not going to issue penalties, we'll come out and just show you what needs to be done. We were looking for evidence that changes had taken place, and anecdotally at least, there was a lot of success. But let me get you an update on that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Nolan.
With your indulgence, a very brief aside. I understand that this is the Natural Resources Subcommittee, but I can't miss the opportunity to comment on Representative Hayden's preference for education rather than enforcement, and suggest that perhaps it is a mindset that permeates this building. We have spent hundreds of millions of dollars in this state building prisons while our schools have plaster falling off their walls because we haven't invested there in education to prevent the need to enforce our laws.
Well, I suppose I have to be the one to point out that we are building prisons in response to a vote of the people that requested us to do that.
Precisely my point, Madam Chair.
But your point is well taken, that there is a lot that can be accomplished in all fields by educating people rather than bringing the big hammer down upon them.
Exactly.
If there are no more questions or comments on this, Representative Krieger.
Maybe just one, Chair Morgan. We've had several agencies in here already, and they've talked about the Oregon plan has come up with several of them, with Jim Brown and several other agencies. And we're talking here on this number 127 supplement, Willamette Basin. Oregon plan, monitoring the Oregon plan. What agency really has, supposedly the Oregon plan was going to be moved into OWEB. You'd think that that agency would take care of whatever the Oregon plan needed. They were in the process of doing that when I was on OWEB board, and I'm trying to think who came there at the time, talked to us about doing that. Where is the Oregon plan? Is there any coordination? How many agencies are going to monitor the same body of water looking for the same information? Because it looks like you've got multiple agencies doing watershed analysis on the same stream. And how does it all come together?
Madam Chair, Representative Krieger, we do have our laboratory administrator here, as I indicated, and he might be able to give you some specifics. But broadly, the state agencies involved with the Oregon plan do try and coordinate their efforts. And the governor's office, in fact, gets involved in coordinating those activities. I know there are regular meetings, I think every 2 weeks, of what they refer to as the core team of Oregon plan agencies. But in the field, I know that our lab staff does work with, for example, the Department of Fish and Wildlife. But that said, a lot of times what folks are monitoring for are in fact different things. For example, our agency is responsible for water quality. And so we are taking samples, looking for very specific information about whether or not we are meeting water quality standards. Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I wouldn't presume to speak for them, but they would be monitoring for the effects of the water on fish. We are not a fish agency per se, they are. So they would be looking at slightly different parameters. The Oregon Health Division monitors drinking water, and those again are different parameters. But if you'd like more technical information, I'd be glad to have Greg Pettit come up here for a little bit and respond to some of those questions more specifically.
Okay.
Do you like that?
I think so.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Greg Pettit. I'm the manager of the Water Quality Monitoring Section and acting division administrator for the Laboratory Division. To specifically answer Representative Krieger's question, I think that this has been an issue since the onset of the Oregon Plan, is to make sure that all these activities were coordinated amongst the different agencies and that there wasn't duplication of activity. And those monitoring activities are coordinated through the Oregon Plan Monitoring Team, which has representatives from all the various agencies that are involved in the Oregon Plan. and including OWEB, and the monitoring that we do is part of an overall monitoring plan to document the effectiveness of the Oregon plan, and there's different roles for the different agencies to perform. The Department of Fish and Wildlife primarily monitors fish populations. We primarily monitor water quality and how that is affected by habitat and other sources of pollution. The volunteer monitoring that is accomplished through the watershed councils is actually supported by us, both in terms of equipment, technical assistance, help in terms of data interpretation, and storage of information that they generate. All these activities are coordinated through the Oregon Plan Monitoring Team. Does that answer your question, or would you like more
somewhat,
information?
Yeah.
Do you have more specific questions?
Well, it just seems that there seems to be duplication. Got a person out there, and this one's going to do this, and it's like a guy in a tire store. He can undo left-hand bolts, and on the right-hand side of the car, you can't, but you got the two people there. It seems to me like there's a lot of people on the same river doing the same type of work, when one or two people could gather a whole array of that information and disseminate it where it needs to go.
Well, I can only reply that to the extent possible, we fully try to eliminate those kinds of duplications, and we do coordinate quite extensively, particularly with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. In fact, their monitoring sites are worked in conjunction with us. If we have to get access to private property, we have a common letter that we send to property owners that tells what work ODF&W would be doing versus the work that DEQ would be doing if they are in the same area. In general, the kinds of assessment activities that are conducted by Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife generally are much larger in scale, but more perhaps limited in scope, whereas we may focus in on a smaller area and do far more intensive investigations. And when it comes to actual water quality assessment, I don't believe ODF&W has much of a role in that at all. That's primarily all done by DEQ or by the watershed councils.
Thank you very much. Any further questions? Representative Crow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize. I haven't been able to stay in the room. I've been dealing with a crisis. But I do have a question. I have a question for either Stephanie or Lisa. In putting this together, I notice we have a headline here that says policy packages protect people's health from toxic chemicals. And I'm just sort of curious what kind of position that puts someone in who might choose to vote against one of those policy packages. Could we be accused then of not protecting people's health from toxic chemicals?
Chris?
Representative Krupp, Madam Chair, I would certainly not propose to put you in that position. What we were attempting to do by this grouping was show the relationship between the policy packages and our agency's strategic priorities. That's the only reason for this.
Okay. Well, I just, Madam Chair, I understand you're wanting to do that. I think it puts possibly an unfortunate consequence for a committee member who might choose to vote against, that someone could use that against them in a campaign at some point in time. And I would prefer not to, from my point of view anyway, speaking for myself and only for myself, I would prefer not to be placed in that position, if at all possible. I also want to know how your open burning fee increase, now, what are you classifying as open burning? This is on page 14, it's package 115. Okay. I'm just curious, what are you talking about slash burning in the forest? Are you talking what we do in grass seed in terms of field burning of straw, or is there something else that I'm missing here?
Actually, Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, this package does not refer to either of those things,
okay,
either slash burning or field burning. This is simply a package. There are areas where, primarily in an urban area, and we will get into this in more depth in the air program, which is next, but where open burning, backyard burning, if you will, is prohibited, or burning of industrial piles is prohibited to protect the airshed. This package would provide a position and a fee that would allow a permit to be issued by the department for that kind of burning in areas where normally it wouldn't be allowed. But it does not apply to slash burning or to field burning, which which are separate programs and activities.
So, Madam Chair, if I may, are you proposing then that if someone wants to burn in their backyard leaves, that they have to get a permit first before they can do that?
Madam Chair and Representative Krupp, I'm going to ask Andy Ginsberg when we get to air to give you more information on that specifically.
Right.
But the short answer is no. It's, it's not that draconian.
Well, I was going to say that might be a little hard to make work. It'd be pretty difficult. Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Okay, if there are no further comments, we have 20 minutes left in the meeting, and the next thing on the agenda is to actually get into the detail of the agency's program and services, and the first one is the Air Quality Division.
We're going to shift personnel here for a second. Thank you. Madam Chair, Andy Ginsberg, who's the administrator of the Air Quality Division, has joined us at the table, and I think before we start the presentation, I would like to ask Andy to respond to Representative Krupp's question in more detail about the open burning package.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, the open burning control program, as Director Halleck mentioned, is to protect public health from avoid nuisances from open burning in populated areas of the state. It's an existing program that we've had for a number of years. It applies primarily in the Willamette Valley and also around other populated areas, and it's a restriction on a variety of types of burning, including industrial burning and commercial burning, and demolition burning, as well as domestic burning. But it only applies in very specific areas. Right now, if someone wants to burn in those areas, they have to get a permit from DEQ, and the permit basically is designed to control the burning so that it minimizes the impacts. We make sure that people only burn when atmospheric conditions are correct so they don't create a nuisance. And the permits are currently issued for free, so the issue here is just charging a fee for an existing permit. And again, the permit is optional. If someone wants to, for example, take the waste to a landfill, they wouldn't need to get this type of permit.
So, Madam Chair, who would be paying for a permit? Or maybe I should better ask, who is currently obtaining permits that you're giving away?
Well, I can give you some examples. We have, our estimate is that approximately 31 industrial permits would be issued, commercial about 62, commercial activities, construction permits about 55, and that would be, you know, an annual number of permits that people request.
And Madam Chair, if I may, are those the, when you're looking at this whole issue of air pollution, especially from the issue of burning, is that where the majority of your smoke is, or impact is coming from, are from those industrial and commercial and construction type folks, or is it wood stoves and backyard burning, or us in the agriculture? Who's the problem?
Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, the answer to that depends on the specific pollutant we're talking about and the specific part of the state that we're talking about. The open burning program is primarily focused on preventing nuisances, and that's why it only applies in populated areas. The wood stove control program is primarily focused on preventing violations of federal air quality standards, and it tends to apply in areas that have previously violated the federal air quality standards.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hayden.
On your program option package narrative on page 226, it says the fee will range from approximately $100 for domestic burning to $1,000 for industrial burning, and will include a hardship waiver for domestic open burning. What's the $100 fee for domestic burning? Are you going to send my wife a bill for burning household trash in the backyard?
Well, again, the program only applies in those areas where burning is currently restricted, which for domestic burning would be in the upper Willamette Valley around populated areas. And so currently, burning is prohibited in those areas. and a permit is required right now in order to burn in those populated areas. So that the difference now is that the permit would come along with a fee, although we would have a waiver program based on income.
So in order to get rid of debris, leaves, scraps from a remodeling project, whatever, you either have to haul it at some expense to a landfill or you have to pay $100 to burn it?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, the open burning program only restricts burning in areas where there are alternatives, and so typically in the areas where it is banned, there are alternatives. For example, where leaves are picked up, or there's readily available places to take leaves. So there are existing alternatives available, and the permits are only issued when there aren't reasonable alternatives. So that we would. You know, we wouldn't need to issue that many permits. Most people would be using alternatives, and that's why the numbers really aren't that high. The program is extremely important in terms of addressing the nuisance complaints that we get, and that's why it applies in the populated areas. It's one of the most common things that we get calls from the public is complaints about burning in there and creating smoke impacts in the neighborhood. So the program allows us to go out. Again, provide technical assistance so that we can show people how to burn in a way that creates less smoke, and encourage people to burn at times when the meteorological conditions are correct so that the smoke doesn't create the impacts. And then when there are, for example, violations where people are burning prohibited materials like plastics and tires and so forth, that we can go ahead and address those situations as well.
So, Madam Chair, if I may follow up, it appears to me that this does affect backyard burning in some of those areas, correct?
In those areas, yes, it does.
Okay.
Representative Nolan.
Madam Chair, this is an example of an instance where we city folk get to pay for a service that rural folks take for granted. That we either don't get to do it at all, or if we do, we have to pay a fee for something that you all take for granted.
Well, only if we okay this.
Well, we may save you from yourself.
Madam Chair, I have to say that, touche to Representative Nolan. You're absolutely correct. We do take it for granted. The only thing I would say in response is you're a lot closer to pizza delivery than I am.
We all make our choices.
Well, Senator Dukes, you like to put your 2 cents worth into this discussion.
Well, as far as I know, I don't burn in my backyard, but if I want to do that, I think I have to go down to the Napa Swenson Burnside Brownsmead Fire District and check it out with them first. So I don't think you're getting anything we don't have. And I've always assumed I'd have to pay a permit fee because they're mostly volunteer and they're scraping by to keep one paid person going down there. So if they give anything away for free, I'd be surprised. And I don't know that because I've never gone to get one, but I've just always assumed that. And in a rural area, that's the safety way to know that I'm not burning down my woods and the next guy's woods and all the rest of them. So it's not a matter of am I being confined by I have to go get a permit. If I want to keep my home, I probably better go get the permit. So we got them too.
And I'm sure that we'll be having a very robust discussion as this matter comes up about the level of the fee or whether there should be a fee. What I'm looking at the clock, and we have 10 minutes left, and knowing that the air quality division is one of the major parts of this budget and a very important program to DEQ, and one in which you're doing some real interesting, innovative things that we're going to want to know about, what I'm going to do is adjourn the committee meeting today so that we don't get just a little bit into this and then have to start again tomorrow. And when we come back tomorrow, we'll start with the Air Quality Division.
That would be great, Madam Chair. Thank you.
And we have one announcement for the committee, and that is because there is no floor session scheduled on Friday, this Friday's full Ways and Means Committee has been rescheduled to Thursday, the 22nd, at 8 o'clock a.m. The subcommittees will meet, the 8:30 subcommittees will meet as scheduled, and there will be no full Ways and Means Committee on Friday. So if you care about that, you should make note of it.
Well, we get up there for a meeting.
8:30 on Thursday.
We will be meeting here on Thursday.
You could make that as a motion.
In the afternoon.
At 1 o'clock.
Regular time.
We will not be meeting on Friday, however, correct?
Well, that depends on how...
Well, Madam Chair, I'm officially excused, so...
Are there any further...
Which may be a blessing, actually, but...
Anything further to bring before the committee today? Then I will adjourn until tomorrow.